Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Let's get into our first news story of today. We're going to be talking a bit about attempts to rename Tembisa Hospital after murdered whistleblower Babita Deokaran. Then we're going to talk a little bit about some important words from the CEO of Anglo American. And lastly, we're going to be talking a little bit about trouble at Fort Hare University. So let's start off with our first one. There's been a proposal to rename Tembisa Hospital after Babita Deokaran. The chief financial accountant in the Gauteng Department of Health, who was murdered for trying to expose corrupt activities that were happening at Tembisa Hospital. The six gunmen who participated in her murder were arrested and found guilty, but the paymasters and their political connections have never faced proper justice. There is renewed interest in this right now because a special investigative unit has been doing work and has released a report recently on it. And there's also been the book Shadow State by Jeff Wicks that's come out, which details the case. But all of this has prompted some people to suggest that Tembisa Hospital should be named in her honor. After all, she was killed trying to ensure that the hospital was not wasting public money and abusing its patients. But her family have pushed back very strongly against this. They say that they are not at all in favor of renaming the hospital. In Facebook post, Renu Williams, who's a member of the family, said the family was absolutely not on board with putting Deokaran's name on the hospital because of the current state and condition it was in. Quote, "We definitely do not want her name on it." Her family has become her voice, so I can confidently say on behalf of Babita that she would not want that either. The best way to honor Babita is to make the hospital corruption-free, improve working conditions for staff, provide quality and dignified medical care to every patient who walks through its doors. Should Tembisa Hospital be cleaned up in every way possible, we may reconsider. And of course, what better way to honor her than for us to ensure that the masterminds behind her assassination are arrested and held accountable? I think very good words there from the family, Michael. This was, kind of a popular sentiment that was being expressed on social media and people calling for it. But it's the epitome of sort of substance of symbolic moves over actual substance. I think it would be quite frankly insulting to name the hospital after a woman who was murdered for trying to protect it without actually fixing the problems that she was murdered to cover up. What's your take on this one?
Yes, I mean, it's often these sorts of things, an expression of a generous public spiritedness, perhaps. We don't know. The story doesn't tell us. Maybe you have some insight into this, Nicholas, as where this idea came from. But I do agree. It verges on the kind of nauseatingly cynical to believe that without changing the existential conditions that the hospital exists in, even today, all this time after we had learned about the terrible things going on there, it really would be a travesty to imagine that, just simply renaming the hospital after her would honorably symbolize what she really stood for and what she was attempting to do. And the key thing is, of course, the arrests. The judicial process that must be followed, must be pursued. We still haven't had any sort of satisfactory advance on the early stages of this investigation. And I think this speaks volumes and is very worrying. So I think the family, as you say, are quite right to resist this. And to emphasize what it is that really would honor her and reflect honorably on what she was trying to do, that she was a civil servant. We are so accustomed to bad mouthing civil servants. And here's a really courageous civil servant who spoke out, was willing to take a stand and paid with her life for it. So quite an extraordinary symbol for us in South Africa. A positive symbol in a sense, but one that we must regard with the greatest respect, and not allow cynicism to tarnish in any way.
So I'd recommend anyone who's particularly interested in this case. I'm going to be writing a review of this book soon for the dailyfriend.co.za. But Jeff Wicks's book, Shadow State, details this and his investigation into it. And one of the things that becomes clear about this is that the sort of public knowledge of the deep connection between Babita's murder and Tembisa Hospital likely would not even been known without journalists digging into this thing. Mm. In fact, police seem either shockingly or incompetent or suspicious in their behavior, according to the story that Wicks tells in his book. And there's a lot of questions still hanging over this case that need to be answered about precisely where it originates from, or where who exactly paid the money and made the order to murder this woman. And you know, unfortunately, there's the tendency in South Africa to just focus on symbols. We'll put up statues of Mandela, but we won't actually engage in the transformation that, you know, most people associate with his sort of legacy and his thing. We'll rename a hospital after some struggle hero, and then the hospital will be looted and the patients will be abused and the staff will be badly treated and badly led. And you know, so often a lot of our media debate gets swept up in these fighting over symbols, whereas, you know, the substance is just left to languish kind of where things are. I don't know, any final thoughts, Michael?
Yes, I think that, I mean, that's really the essential thing, isn't it? That we want that accountability to be made practical, real. It must be a daily and an hourly demand of the society. Until it is, we're going to be living with this kind of abuse and the kind of nauseating cynicism too, until people are called to account. And it's really up to us. It's up to society to do that. And I absolutely agree with you. Journalists play a key role in this. We must applaud that, but also emulate it. It's got to be a public effort to make sure that we achieve that level of accountability. Without it, we're not going to get any of the other warm-hearted things that all these symbols supposedly stand for.
Exactly right. Okay, let's move on to our next story. We talk about it at length, but we've had an important voice adding to this conversation. For years, we've been quite critical of a lot of big business for not really kind of saying what they think about South Africa's politics. You all have this very irritating phenomenon that's been going on for a long time, where behind closed doors, cocktail parties and boardroom meetings and all sorts of things, you'll have CEOs who will denounce the policies of the government. They'll say it's killing business, it's driving us away from investment. You'll see companies move investments offshore, delist from South Africa, move things away. But then when it comes to their sort of public-facing comments, there's this enormously warm, sort of almost praising attitude towards so much of government. Well, you know, we're working with government to do this, and we applaud this transformation agenda. And there's always this kind of rhetoric that comes out of government, out of big business, and it's something we've been very critical of because it's not sincere, and it's, you know, not helping the country to achieve economic growth. Well, Anglo-American CEO Duncan Weinbold was speaking at the Johannesburg Mining and Durban on Wednesday, and he went after the government. He said the reason that exploration for new mining projects is at a extremely low level in South Africa, and why Anglo has not been investing more in it, is because, in his words, South Africa has a, quote, very unsupportive policy for exploration in the past 20-odd years. That's a very important part of the mining life cycle. It takes 17 years to go from finding a deposit to going to full production. That's a generation of mines that have been foregone. We can be transformative in growing the country and building new mines, but we are behind the curve because it takes very strong leadership and supportive policy to do that. Not only does it take 17 years for the mine to reach production, but it also takes another 5 or 6 to ramp it up before it pays back anything. During that time, you need relatively stable political environment and good, transparent fiscal policies. I think that's part of the challenge we're going to have to face. Very glad to see this. Speaking out from big business is exactly the kind of thing that I think we want to see previously from more business. And you know, the problem he's talking about, South Africa sits on some of the largest mineral deposits in the world. You have everything from coal to chrome to manganese to platinum, just endless amounts of resources here. And yet very, very few new mines are being explored or looking at being built in this country. In 2006, there was 6.2 billion rand being spent to explore for minerals in South Africa. That number is now below a billion rand, down to 781 million last year. Michael, what's your takeaway from all of this?
I thought one of the interesting things about it is, you know, he's addressing the Johannesburg mining indaba, and he's presumably telling his immediate audience what they already know. And this is very important, I think, to me. He's deliberately saying things which the audience is probably fully aware of. Doesn't need the audience, I'm sure, doesn't need explaining how long it takes and how much money it takes and how difficult it is. But he's using that platform to express something that goes way beyond the confines of that mining gathering, and I think that is very important to me. It's exactly what you've said. It's a further sign, and I know there are contradictions. Only last week we were talking about Adrian Gore urging us not to make a noise about crime because it was bad for the country. There are these exceptions where top business people are saying things which, out of a kind of politesse, which we think is counterproductive and not going to help anyone. But increasingly, I think the society is kind of shifting into a place where we're much more willing to speak publicly about fundamental policy issues. You know, the mining environment cuts right to the heart of economic policy, property ownership, attitudes to business, the shocking hostility that has been shown for 30 years towards the business community and the private sector has a cost, and the cost is paid actually chiefly by the very people that the government thinks it has been assisting with all these conditions and limitations. And in fact, the very reverse is now being revealed to be true. And that's why I think what he said here is very important, using this quite prominent platform to project, broadcast that message way beyond the venue in which the mining aficionados were gathering, and I think it's very important for people to take note of that. I think one of the other things is, you know, we are so accustomed in a way to things changing very slowly, and we tend to be prone to kind of pessimism that nothing changes, it's nothing's ever going to happen. Well, it does actually, and it's these little things that are really so important. A very significant figure speaking out, it does counter that narrative that nothing changes. Things are changing. He's an important figure. He's adding his voice to lots of other people like him, and a bit like that long haul that we see in production of a mine, just preparing it to be useful. Spending so many years making it useful, and eventually, more 5-6 years, as he said later, hoping to get some kind of return. I think our politics is a bit like that as well, and we need to condition ourselves into thinking that there's not going to be a sort of 100-day magical turnaround here. We've got to just focus on all the things which we know are important, including the things that the miners are telling us, the things that the families of whistleblowers are telling us. These are all the building blocks that we need to consolidate and work on and protect publicly and move forward with them in the certain knowledge that that is how you build a better, more secure and more prosperous country. So, yeah, I think a very important statement from him.
No, definitely. It is, changing political culture, moving the state in a different direction, changing society's attitudes, changing elite and intellectual opinion, convincing the middle class to behave differently. All of these are very long-term projects, and they take, people having lots of conversations. They take people going on podcasts every day and saying things into microphones like we're doing here. They require articles to be written. They require political parties to adopt some of these ideas and campaign on them. This is, the slow movement of society's sort of values. I think we're as you say, we're seeing seeds and work that has been done over a while is now kind of beginning to blossom. We're still a long way from reaping the benefits, unfortunately, and the crop could still die, but so far, so good. Things are, I think, definitely moving in the right direction. This is, you know, as you say, another sign that people, South Africans, are being a bit more honest about what our problems are. And that is a very important part of fixing the problem. You know, as they say, when you're trying to get through something, admitting that there's a problem is a very good first step. Okay. Do you have any final thoughts, or should we move on?
I think we can move on. There's a, as
okay,
typically of our programs, there's always a segue, which so things we're looking at the same condition in slightly different forms, and I think the next story is exactly true of that.
Yeah, well, this is you know, when thinking about society doing the wrong thing, this is kind of a good example of it. The Fortier University, a very important university in the history of this country, has educated many important figures in South Africa, has been going through an enormous amount of trouble, mismanagement, and chaos recently, and things have gotten worse, unfortunately. But there have been protests against the university administration that have raised concerns that seem sort of reasonable to me. However, these protests have gotten out of control, and they have turned to violence. University of Fort Hare has given students until 5 o'clock today, so kind of when this show will be going out, to vacate premises after several campus buildings were torched in violent protests. Preliminary estimates place the damage between 250 million rand and 500 million rand, with petrol bomb attacks on administrative, student affairs, and agricultural buildings. Protesters are calling for the vice chancellor to step down over what they say is mismanagement and government systems collapse. The university has obtained an urgent court interdict in the Eastern Cape High Court in Bushu, prohibiting students from holding unlawful gatherings at their Dekeni and East London campuses. And then there was this sort of wild thing, which I thought was quite telling about what was going on. A student leader who spoke to News 24 on condition of anonymity, which is, you know, not a great sign when you're a protester. Something is wrong. Either that you fear horrific retaliation against you for speaking out, or you're doing something very illegal. Said students would continue to put pressure on stakeholders to act against university management. The student leader said, quote, "We are calling on all stakeholders to come down to the university and listen to our grievances. The university management does not care. Students will lead themselves and continue protesting until all our demands are met." Well, as far as I can tell, regardless of how legitimate the grievances are, the students are going to lead themselves into not having a university anymore at this rate. And this is unfortunately a pattern of behavior we've seen so many times, this kind of nihilistic, well, the only way anyone will pay attention to us is if we burn down the university. When you start to cause 250 million to 500 million rands worth of damages, you start to enter the world where, you know, this is not like a rural school in some Limpopo village that the government will probably be rebuild in a couple of years. This is the kind of damage where the kind of the story might be over, the game might be up, particularly when the university is mismanaged. And who knows how long it'll be till they rebuild the stuff. I mean, our parliament is still not rebuilt after that was burned down in an arson attack. Michael, what do you make of this story?
Yeah, I mean, lots of different things here. I think it's quite striking that student that you highlighted, who was only prepared to speak on condition of anonymity. We don't really know whether these are exactly his words, but it looks as though he was being quoted. This is a fairly articulate young person. He knows what he or she is saying. And, you know, there's some kind of intellectual engagement with conditions on the ground, whatever that might be. But there are, you know, the one thing we know about youthful rage is the sincerity of its fever. And I think when it coalesces into a sort of mobbish lunacy, it's dangerous, and you end up with conditions much worse than you might have had to contend with in the first place. I think maybe broadly speaking, I don't really know enough about it, but we do know that we're living in a society where so many millions of people do feel excluded for one reason or another. The simple immiseration of their lives compared to the the flamboyant excess of the very few who are wealthy in the elite, who are well connected, who are entrepreneurs, who are friends with senior people in government, and so on. These conditions, these contrasts are seen to be insulting almost. People feel very excluded as a result. I'm reminded of that phrase that one used to hear a lot in England in the 80s, when I happened to be working there in the 80s, the disaffected youth, or disaffected youth, as it usually was. One can't simply lay the blame on all these sociological concepts. But nevertheless, I do think, you know, we're dealing with an element of that. If people don't have a stake, they are much more likely to allow their anger to sort of run over into mobbish excess. I don't know if there's such a word as mobbish now that I think of it, but the excessive mobs. It's symptomatic in a way of how we are. And as part of it is also doubtless a feeling among too many people that there are no consequences for how they act. They can act out, they can burn things down, they can destroy things, and nobody's going to come along and really hold them to account. Any more than the people at the very top of the pile, the cream of the elite, and the connected cadres, as Herman Pretorius keeps saying, they're also not accountable. They're not called to account. Nobody's sort of stopping them from doing what they're doing. The Tembisa Hospital, 2 billion rand in fraud being investigated. That is absurd. So, in these conditions, It is unfortunately true that people are going to allow anger to, people are going to be angry, and that anger is going to run out of control from time to time at very great cost.
We've seen some stuff at Fort Hare over the last couple of years is crazy. Like about 2 years ago, the university's fleet manager and one of the vice chancellor's bodyguards were murdered. There's just sort of been endless kind of chaos in the administration. So it's clearly badly run. But this also then, when you have violence being enacted and murders taking place, you also then wonder, like, maybe there's someone who thinks that they can benefit from encouraging these protests to get super violent, or is using protests as an excuse to set fire to things, or, you know, the whole thing becomes murky. So you've got this like horrific intersection of this, you know, this being disconnected from having a stake that you talk about, Michael, with kind of institutional collapse, and they feed off of each other. And the end result is a university that is not functioning anymore. And so that's potential lives, opportunities, advancements into the middle class, escape from poverty, destroyed. That's what's being burned down here, ultimately.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, one would like to see student bodies speaking up, the youth wings of political parties just taking a stand and saying, this is, you know, this is not the way to go, stepping in and you know, using their activism differently on that campus. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're not easy solutions when anger spills over like this, but certainly, you know, it's not something we can just simply brush aside and say, well, this has happened again, because it has happened before. The society can't sustain itself if this is constantly wearing it away at the sides, you know. So it is important.
I see the comment on this from the various parties of the action is saying the DA have called for investigations. The EFF has had an MP claim that the students weren't behind the fire, and the ANC Youth League has blamed Fort Hare University management for the burning. You know, this is kind of adding to the problem. It's like, well, yeah, you know, what did you expect? Well, actually, no, you know, you expect the people who are going to university to, you know, understand what the consequences are here. And, you know, if you've made it to university, you are already kind of in the top chunk of our society. So, you know, I think there are limits to the leeway we should give to people on some of these things. I don't know. Any final thoughts from you, Michael?
Not really. I mean, I absolutely agree with that. you know, the minute we begin to think that we are not responsible for our society and our country, then we may as well give up. You know, we do actually all have a stake in this, and we've got to exercise that agency, and not constantly look for excuses. Yeah,
definitely. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be back tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. Goodbye. The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.